Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway. Once again, we have an opportunity here for the professor, the publisher, and the editor to give you some commentary, some analysis, perhaps even a little insight if we're very lucky. Dr. Chartok is sitting over here trying to recover from his fun drive extravaganza. You doing okay?
Thank you, Rex. We're doing just fine. I appreciate your concern.
That's good. Good, good. We're, you know, we worry about folks becoming a little more frail, Alan, and so, you know, we're just trying to keep things on the
Rex,
up and up.
That's very nice of you to say, and I'm really glad that you're concerned about me, and you will definitely pay for that.
That makes one of us.
And you will definitely pay for that. You're on a better trajectory, Ira.
We're doing our fun drive, too, but we're always doing
we're
our
always
fun drive.
Doing this, right.
Yes. I would call up some of these matching drives and see how that works.
That's great. Yeah, that's right. Why can't we sort of tap into that?
One of the things, Ira, that I saw, you know, as we sent around some stuff this week was that there seems to be a competition between those who are using the paywall and those who are not. And your company really believes in absolute access to everything, right? And there are places like the Wall Street Journal, which you're saying nothing doing. You got to pay for it.
Well, as we've discussed here a number of times, our company, Digital First Media, and the Journal Register Company has said that it does not believe that paywalls, that is charging for admission to websites, is the way to go. And the last statistic I saw is that there are roughly 400 newspapers in the country now that have paywalls out of about 1,400 daily newspapers. And the trend is certainly growing
towards paywalls.
And our CEO, John Payton, just the other day wrote a blog in which he basically said, I still don't believe in paywalls. I think the way to go is the way we've been going, which is more readers and thus more advertisers. But he said, I am the CEO of a company and we've got to talk about raising revenue. So they're going to be doing some experimenting selectively, the details of which I'm not certain. But he's still not advocating paywalls, but he does feel an obligation to see what's going to happen.
So let me see if I got this right. Peyton's place would,
but of whom
I couldn't help it, would obviously be right now. We just don't know.
Well, he has some indication because when it's a little too confusing to reiterate all of it, but he was in charge of the Journal Register Company when this Digital First Media Company was formed. He then had under his umbrella of leadership of the Media News Group, and that was a company that had already begun using paywalls. And according to Peyton, the paywall experiment from Media News Group generated $300,000 in revenue, which he said was a pittance for a company that generates $1 billion a year. So he believes that was, I think he used the word abysmal. So he hasn't seen anything in that experiment that makes him really encouraged that at least the way they were doing it is going to work. So now they're trying other ways, apparently, generally under what's called the metered approach. But I have not seen any Planet Hour paper, and I'm not as close to the loop as I used to be. So I'll probably find out when everybody else does.
You know, I believe that we will come to the point where people will end up paying for what they access. I think that it's wonderful that Journal Register is trying to keep it in the, or Digital First, your company, Ira, is trying to keep things the way it is. But the New York Times certainly has had significant success with their paywall. I was at a meeting recently with a Times executive who was talking about the fact that the paywall has not only brought them 600,000 customers who have bought in to pay for their digital access, says, but it actually has increased their Sunday home delivery circulation because they give people one of these all areas access passes that you can actually get the paper cheaper if you buy the digital access. And so they have built their print subscription while at the same time building their pay behind
Margaret,
the paywall.
Margaret Sullivan, their public editor, wrote a column about this a few weeks ago. This was right after the New York Times began touting how successful, by their terms, this paywall experiment had been. And they said that the circulation revenue, including the paywall, now exceeds the advertising revenue. I think that that's a major cause of concern. And there
concern?
Yeah, because it's that means that the advertising, the print revenue, advertising revenue, I think they said is down 11%.
I think they look at it as being great because that means that the revenue is coming in from readers. Same as public radio. That means that your audience really appreciates you. They're willing to pay for it.
I think they do think it's great, and I don't know that it can be sustained long term. Another phrase that is being used that's not mine, but I think it's a good one, that people are talking about with these paywalls is the sandbag strategy. That newspapers who are installing paywalls aggressively are succeeding in generating revenue that they much need and were not getting. But much like when you put sandbags against a wall to block the flood, it right now has stemmed the tide of declining revenues. But can it hold long term? And that therein again lies the question that we've said a number of times is nobody really knows for sure. And we're all sort of flailing and trying to figure it out.
Nobody really knows. The problem is what we do know is that we can't continue to give away content for free and that the migration of readers to digital is a fact. The most significant fact of which is the huge growth of mobile. You know, we're going to see a sixfold increase in advertising on mobile over the next 3 years alone. The number of people with mobile phones will double. 80% of Americans will hold mobile phones by 2016. And that is a place where people are going to increasingly be accessing information that we now charge people for in print. If we don't charge them digitally, now my company, my newspaper is not charging
right now. It's the Hearst company.
The Hearst is charging in some markets, but not here. But I think we will have to. I can't see how you can sustain under a free model. I don't know how you're going to get enough advertising, for example, on a little mobile phone to be able to sustain any kind of journalistic enterprise if that's the place where increasingly people go for information.
Well, you know, it's very annoying to me because I read the Times. I wake up three times during the night. I see what's new in the Times. But how many newspapers can I afford to get? You know, shall I get both the Berkshire Eagle and the Times Union and the New York Times? I mean, where does it stop? Which is why I've always thought that the right way to go here, and I mentioned this to you guys, and you turned down your noses at me, has been that...
That had nothing to do with what you were saying.
Right. Somebody has got to figure out how you can buy more than one product at a single stop where you can go.
That's right. I think other business people are making the same point that you are, people in the journalism business, I mean. And there are models for that happening. It's just that they may be premature. They're not at that point yet. But there is this notion of a sort of standardization so that there could be, in effect, a single bookshelf or a magazine rack, and you pay a certain amount to that broker, and then you can have 5 pages of the New York Times and 6 pages of the Berkshire Eagle and 12 pages of the Times Union.
Well, you know, each time you're right about mobile, we're already seeing it. And I know, again, in our company, we are getting advertising revenue from mobile. And our iPhone app is different than our iPad app. They look different. They do different things. They're all advertising opportunities. And I guess the other piece to this puzzle is as the print world declines, and as perhaps more and more newspapers reduce the days that they print. One of our papers recently went to 3 days a week. I don't know if you've spoken about it on this program.
No, I believe we have.
But that means fewer expenses, which means that the advertising revenue that needs to be generated does not have to be quite as significant to cover your costs as in the print days. I don't know. I'm sticking with with our story, which is we think that advertising can cover it if we can show them we have enough dedicated readers who stay on the site for a considerable amount of time and come back many times during the day.
It'll be really interesting to see how these 3-day-a-week newspaper experiments work out. Of course, Syracuse being the most significant in this area. That has just happened recently. Oneida, the paper.
Yeah, Oneida, which is printed in Syracuse, which was part of certainly the motivation to change changed to 3 days.
Printed on that press?
Yeah, it's printed on that press.
But I actually wanted to ask you guys, the post office is now not going to be delivering mail on Saturdays. And I've been reading some people talking about how this is going to have profound implications to the newspaper industry. Will it?
Well, if you're a weekly newspaper, and most weekly newspapers publish on Thursdays, typically you would get to the paper would get to the post office in time for a Thursday delivery. But if it was a delayed a day or two, or in the case of daily newspapers, there we have a small mailing list. People pay subscriptions, typically the Snowbirds. That could delay for a day or so. I read somewhere where some of the weekly, the magazine-type periodicals run the risk of not being as timely if something they expected to be delivered on Saturday doesn't show up until Sunday. And that might change their focus.
Seems to me it could,
I'm sorry, till Monday.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems to me it could be a great business opportunity, though, because you know who does go by all of those homes, and that is your newspaper carrier. So you could have a certain delivery service. As it is, our carriers are pressed because, for example, our carriers for the Times Union actually handle 13 different titles. You know, we don't deliver just the Times Union. We deliver a lot of the other papers and the like in the community. And that's a hard thing, you know, for a carrier to remember in the dark of the night. You know,
and on the weekend, if they're in their private car, there's only so much they can fit in that car.
Yeah.
Sunday paper is bigger than the rest of the week.
So it may be a flawed concept, but it does seem like there ought to be something to that. So it makes you wonder.
You know, I've always wondered, Rex, about that because, you know, our guy comes around in his car in the morning, and I don't know how he does it, but it's quite a way away from the street, and he's able to land that paper right in front of the door.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he's able to hit the snowdrift right
No. He really is able to do that. You know, and I wonder whether organized baseball has ever thought about, you know, sort of doing tryouts with these.
Well, guys. What's particularly remarkable
pinpoint accuracy.
What's particularly remarkable regarding your house is that since you have the large gates in the front and the guardhouse and then the moat, it's a longer throw.
What about the Dobermans?
The Dobermans. Well, they have to sleep sometimes.
Murray the Doberman. Yes, of course. What a concept. So if you're just joining us, it's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith here. Dr. Shartok being the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, Ira the longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and I'm the editor of the Times Union here in Albany. For folks in Waxahachie and Evansville and other places around the country, we're happy to have you with us. You know,
Rexy.
Yes, sir.
This time in our fund drive you were referring to before, we did something we had not really done successfully before. We said, if you don't like the fund drive, if you don't want to be, we love our fund drive. And frankly, we have evidence that more people listen to the fund drive than any other time during the year, whether one believes it or not. However, we did something this year, which is called we had a locked box. And we said, everything that goes in, now other places have tried this before, but it was incredibly successful. We walked in with $229,000 in that locked box. And I think it told us something, which is there is a place so that people really want to, you know, help out. They can do that before. But a lot of people who called in during the drive were saying, by the way, I gave during the locked box and now I'm giving again, which is fascinating.
You know, I think also you may have find a benefit to having that kind of ongoing commitment from people. If they can give any time, if you're in constant fundraising mode, wouldn't that actually work? If so, you'd be running spots all the time, and that would, if possible. I mean, there's already quite a level of commitment to the listeners of Northeast public radio stations, but that would almost increase the level of commitment, wouldn't it, if they're doing it all the time?
Maybe.
Interesting. You know, there has been talk. I was just at a media conference this week as we speak, in which there was talk of the public broadcasting model for stressed legacy print products.
We've heard this before, you know.
Do people want to be members? Yeah. And the difficulty is that, you know, there's a hostility. This may surprise you, Ira. There's a hostility toward a lot of the press.
That's really hard to imagine. But what's the difference between being a member, quote unquote, and a subscriber? You're a member without receiving the
paper?
You
get benefits. It's not just the publication. You get, and there's just a sense you treat people differently. You not only give them baseball caps and T-shirts with Alan's picture on it, but they also are invited to special things, bobbleheads, right? Your Shartok bobblehead. Not bubblehead, and you actually get access.
No mistakes in their copies.
No,
we save the mistakes for the other papers.
No, but wouldn't the right thing to do in that case make it that if you have not-for-profit models, then you could have members. But since newspapers are allegedly for profit, you know, that makes it a little different.
Maybe so. You know, there's almost a sense of that. For example, the Adirondack magazine, Adirondack Explorer, yeah, is a not-for-profit. And so their subscribers actually are supporting the not-for-profit enterprise that publishes this magazine. There's some experience of that.
Well, it would be very interesting to see what the industry's reaction to not-for-profit newspapers are. The reason I say that is I think specifically of Vince Lombardi and the Green Bay Packers. The Green Bay Packers, I believe, is the only community-owned, is that right?
That's right.
Only community-owned, yeah, you know, place and team. And I think, did you tell me this, Ira? Somebody did, that the owners were so distressed by that that they said that from now on you had to, the only way to have a National Football League team was to own the team. You weren't allowed to have not-for-profits.
No, I hadn't heard that. I mean, Green Bay is just unique because of the size of its of the town and, sure, and the history of the franchise. But naturally, we're in print and newspaper business aren't business, and we're always soliciting for circulation revenue, and we're always soliciting for advertising revenue. And I guess maybe, again, because I'm old-fashioned, it's hard for me to get my arms around a drive that would solicit members a la public radio. I'm not putting it down. I'm just not, it just doesn't ring that it could
work. Well, you guys had better do something fast because you're in a lot of trouble.
Oh, here's what we're doing fast. We're investing. We're building a beautiful new press. We're going to put out a great newspaper. I predict that our circulation will rise, that more people will like the paper, and this will be good.
Well, I think a lot of people in the country are going to be watching the Times Union because of the investment that they are making in a press at a time when, you know, I have a press in Kingston that has been idle for 2 years that was only 12 years old. It's like new, and we can get rid of it. And now, because people are not buying that kind of equipment.
So are you doubting the wisdom of Rex?
No, I'm just saying we're watching it very carefully. I mean, Rex has got
Which
a great
another
paper.
Way of saying I doubt his move.
No, because he's right. He's gonna see increased circulation. He's going to see
why.
It.
I mean, the content of the paper seems to me to be what drives me to buy
the
a paper.
The paper is going to, if the color is good and the reproduction is good, the paper is going to jump off the newsstand, and it's going to make help. It's going to convince some people who might not have felt it was attractive enough or interesting enough to read it. And beyond that, I believe you're going to have color availability on every page of the paper, which
Correct.
Means that you're going to have additional color opportunities for your advertising, which generates more revenue. So there's no question they're going to see a bump. And the question I have, is that bump going to be enough to sustain some of the other declines that
right.
we're all facing?
Good question.
But, you know, I've told Rex long before, you know, they had made a commitment to buy the press. I said, boy, you got a great paper. It's too bad you have such a crappy press. And you know, he did not disagree, I think.
Absolutely.
I can say, so.
Absolutely true. And we are using the opportunity to make some content improvements. You know, we get an opportunity because there will be more people picking up the paper to check us out. So we get an opportunity to reestablish a first impression with some people.
And a redesign, perhaps?
A little bit of redesign. Yeah. Yep, yeah. Absolutely.
Frankly, the whole thing, that your explanation sounds a little vague to me, Rex, but maybe that's because I'm very tired.
Yes, not just quite tracking it there, huh? Well, here's one of your favorite topics, Alan. What is a journalist? Qu'est-ce que c'est ça? Here it's in the New Jersey county of Union County, where prosecutors have insisted that a local blogger give them the names of government officials, 16 of them, whom she accused online of misusing county generators after Hurricane Sandy. The problem is that a Superior Court judge has ordered a hearing to decide, is she protected by the Shield Law? Does she have to reveal her sources or does she not? It's a really interesting question because on the one hand, yeah, you know, she can say she's a journalist. On the other hand, what would stop then anybody from claiming protection under the Shield Law?
Precisely. I've had contretemps with, you know, a guy I consider to be one of the most sleazy of journalists who has often looked at me, you know, publishing the Legislative Gazette or writing columns. He's not a real journalist. So here you got this guy writing for a sleazy newspaper who is always calling names about the other people not being real journalists when, you know, I know who the sleazebag is. So therefore, this business of identifying who's a journalist is, and especially now that people are reading so much online, is a very tough one.
We talked about this many years ago, and I was vilified by many in my community for scoffing at the notion of bloggers. And who are these people? And I just have evolved with it. I think that the bloggers, and as Alan pointed out, there are so many places where you can be published, and many people who were quote-unquote traditional journalists are now blogging elsewhere. The definition has become broader, And I'm not sure who makes the final decision on a case such as this one, but I don't see how you cannot conclude that people who write and are published and their words are disseminated are not journalists. There are lousy journalists and there are good journalists, just like there are in print. So you could be a lousy blogger, but that doesn't mean you're not a journalist. You're just a lousy journalist.
Well, you know, up there in the North Country, there's a wonderful little newspaper called the Boonville Journal. I used to write for them. And so let's say, I don't know how many readers they have, but if a blog is online and it gets 5,000 people reading it every time compared to the number of people who read the print version, in the Boonville Journal, you wonder whether it's on paper or not.
Oh, exactly right. I used to publish weekly newspapers in Dutchess County, New York, and some of them had less than 1,000 subscribers, but they were journalists who were working. They were young, up-and-coming journalists. A lot of them pretty good.
You really have to rely upon the courts to make the judgment, but you have to hope that they will do it liberally, that if someone is gathering information that's in the public interest and publishing it, that person is a journalist. As you said, Ira, maybe she's not a good one, but what shouldn't be the determining factor is whether the person makes a profit at it or whether they're hired by a company as powerful as yours or mine, but rather are they undertaking the functions of journalism? And you may need a judge sometimes to make the interpretation of whether that falls under that person is a journalist by definition of the Shield Law, but you would hope that they would make that interpretation liberally. So,
what else you got this week, Grex?
Well, here's an interesting follow-up to the controversy over the Journal News of Westchester publishing the online map about gun owners.
Yep.
A New York appellate court has sided with the New York City Police Department against the New York Times over whether the cops should turn over home addresses of handgun owners to the Times. The Times made a Freedom of Information Law request back in 2010, and the court's thinking is releasing the addresses, quote, might endanger permit holders. And since the NYPD had already released the zip codes of permit holders to the Times, we would really serve no further journalistic purpose. That is what the appellate division said.
I'd love to know how many guys on the appellate division, are healed.
are healed?
Are walking around with guns.
Oh, yes. Well, interesting question, And apropos of that, USA Today did a survey of members of Congress to see who was packing and who's not. And
packing, that's the word I was looking for.
There you go.
This court ruling regarding the New York Times, was it made before the law was passed in New York State regarding the non-access of records?
Yes, that relates to
public records about
gun owners. It would be the same difference.
Yeah. So even if the court had not ruled this way, now does the law would have prescribed that they couldn't get that information?
You would presume that's the case. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, the thing that's unfortunate.
I don't like it.
Well, it's unfortunate from a journalism standpoint is the Journal News was vilified by many, and largely, I think, for the right reason, for just printing the database with no context. New York Times was unlikely to do that. The New York Times, I think, based on their track record and their journalism, was not intending to print this entire list of gun owners. They wanted to do whatever analysis they wanted to do. And unfortunately, for the Journal News case, set a precedent that spooked a lot of people who felt this shouldn't have happened and they changed the law as a result.
Yeah, and we can hope that the New York State Legislature will come back and take back the bad revision that they made to the Freedom of Information Law that bars the public from having access to those public documents. If the government is issuing permits to gun holders, there's no reason why that should be off limits to the public. Whether it should be published, as you said, Ira, that's another question. The Times says, they don't do just raw data. They do journalism, and there's a valid question as to whether what the Journal News did was the right thing journalistically. But certainly, under the law, you got to be sorry that the New York State Legislature has closed down that access.
Well, I don't have a lot of respect for the New York State Senate, the upper house, which clearly is catering to the gun lovers and which is not going to come back and make those chapters, we call them chapter amendments, and make it better, because that's the deal they got in passing this law and having to hold their arms behind their backs and pass this law in the first place. So I wouldn't hold my breath there, Mr. Rex.
Okay, I'm not going to hold my breath, but I am going to get out of here. I've got to go see my dentist. So it's been wonderful with you gentlemen this morning, but we all have our obligations and mine is pending. So I got to go.
Good luck.
See you folks next week.
Lots of other fakes. I've even met a genius who swallows rattlesnakes. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people, like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance.
But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill.